The charges had shattered the drill tree trunk where it pierced the bottom side of the metal mound. The severed shaft canted at an angle below, continuing down into murky depths. Bits of debris still fell from the opening in the mound's bottom. The chamber below the island was thick with swirling shreds of vegetation. They approached the opening cautiously.
"I'd better check it out with a robot first," Toshio said. "There may be unstable chunks left in the shaft."
"I will do this, ladder runner. Robots, heed my close nerve socket."
Toshio nodded.
"Yeah, you're right. You do it, Kipiru."
The pilot, with his direct machine nerve interface, would be able to control the probe better than Toshio. Of the human support, only Emerson Dianeti and Thomas Orley had such cyborg links. It would be a long time before most humans could deal with the side effects of socket implantation, as well as dolphins, who needed the interface far more and had been bred for it. Under Kipiru's direction, a small probe detached itself from the rear of the sled, jetted off toward the hole, and disappeared within. Toshio had never expected to be sent right back out again with Kipiru to a site where, in his opinion, neither of them had behaved particularly well. The importance of their mission, to serve and protect two important scientists, confused him even further. Why didn't Krydike assign someone else, someone more reliable? Of course, the captain might have ordered all four of them out of the ship to get them out of his way. But that didn't seem to fit either. Toshio decided not to try to pierce Krydike's logic. Inscrutability seemed to be at the heart of it. Perhaps that was what it was to be a captain. Toshio only knew that he and Kipiru were both determined to do a good job on this mission. As a midshipman, he officially outranked Kipiru, but tradition made warrant officers and pilots masters of middies, unless otherwise decided by higher authority. Toshio would be assisting Denny and Saut in their studies. On security matters, Kipiru was in charge. Toshio was still surprised to find that others stopped and listened when he made suggestions. His opinions had been routinely solicited. That alone would take some getting used to. The screen showed a picture sent back by the robot. A hollow cylindrical excavation through the foamy metal. Broken stumps were all that remained of the anchor bearings that had held the drill tree shaft in place. Bits of debris drifted down past the camera as they watched. As the robot rose, the light from above slowly grew brighter through a thin haze of bubbles.
"Think it's wide enough to pass a sled?" Toshio asked.
Kipiru whistled that the passage looked navigable. The robot surfaced into a pool several meters wide. Its camera panned the rim, transmitting images of blue sky and thick green foliage. The high trunk of the drill tree had crashed into the forest. The slope of the pool made it hard to see the damage this had done, but Toshio was sure it hadn't fallen in the direction of the Abo village. They had worried that blasting away to the interior of the island might panic the hunter-gatherers. They took the risk anyway, because routinely trying to scale the treacherous island walls in open surf would have been dangerous and a foolish exposure to galactic spy satellites. The apparently random falling of a tree on an island would hardly be noted by anyone watching from above.
"Uh-oh,"
Toshio pointed. Denny moved closer to look at the screen.
"What is it, Tosh? Is there a problem?"
Kipiru stopped the camera as it was about to finish its scan.
"There," Toshio said. "That jagged crop of coral is hanging over the pool. It looks about to fall."
"Well, can you have the robot wedge something under to prevent it?"
"I don't know. What do you think, Kipiru?"
"Some scheme may work if fate buys it. We'll make a gamble and simply try it."
Kipiru eyed his twin screens and concentrated. Toshio knew the pilot was listening to a complex pattern of sound images transmitted over his neural link.
Under Kipiru's command, the robot moved to the edge of the pool. Its claw arms grabbed the spongy metal of the rim to pull forward. There was a small rain of pebbles as it brought its treads to bear.
"Watch out!" Toshio called.
The jagged rock tipped forward. The camera showed it tottering ominously. Denny cringed back from the screen. Then the rock toppled over and crashed into the robot. There followed a swirl of spinning images. Denny continued watching the screen, but Toshio and Kipiru shifted their gaze to the bottom of the shaft. Suddenly, a rain of objects fell from the gap, tumbling into the darkness below. The debris sparkled in the sled's beams as it dropped into the abyss. After a long silence, Kipiru spoke.
"The probe is down there, lungs unbreathing. I was spared the cutoff false death. It still whistles, stranded echoes."
Kipiru meant that the probe still sent him messages from whatever murky ledge had finally stopped it. Its tiny brain and transmitter hadn't been destroyed, and Kipiru had not suffered the jolt that a sudden cutoff could send to a connected nervous system. But the robot's flotation tanks had been ruined. It was down there for good.
"That must be the last obstruction. I shall go then, carefully, testing. Denny, take the sled and watch me."
Before Kipiru or Toshio could stop him, Saud was off his sled and away. He fluked mightily and disappeared into the shaft. Kipiru and Toshio looked at each other, sharing a malign thought about crazy civilians. At least Toshio thought he could have taken a camera with him. But then, if Saud had waited, Toshio would have had a chance to insist on the dubious privilege of scouting the passage. He looked at Denny. She watched the robot probe screen, as if it might deliver some token about what was happening to Saud. She had to be reminded to swim over and take control of the other sled. Toshio had always thought of Denny Sutman as one more adult scientist, friendly but enigmatic. Now he saw that she was not an awful lot more mature than he, and while she had the honor and status of a full professional, she lacked the eclecticism his officer training was giving him. She would never encounter the range of people, things, and situations he would in the course of his career. He looked again to the shaft entrance. Kipiru blew nervous bubbles. They would have to decide soon what to do if Saud did not reappear. Saud was obviously a genetic experiment in which the gene crafters were pushing a set of traits toward a calculated optimum. If judged successful, the traits would be grafted into the main pool of the neo-dolphin species. The process imitated, on a vastly quicker scale, the segregation and mixing that worked in nature. Such experiments sometimes resulted in things not planned, though. Toshio wasn't sure he trusted Saud. The Finn's obscurity wasn't like the inscrutability of Krydike, deep and thoughtful. It grated like the dissembling of some humans he had known. Also, there was the sexual game between Saud and Denny. Not that he was a prude. Such hobbies weren't exactly forbidden, but they had been known to cause problems. Apparently, Denny wasn't even aware of the subtle ways she was encouraging Saud. Toshio wondered if he had the nerve to tell her, or if it was any of his business. Another tense minute passed. Then, just as Toshio was about to go himself, Saud shot out of the shaft and swooped toward them.
"The way is clear. I'll lead you airward."
Kipiru jetted his sled over to the dolphin anthropologist and squawked something pitched so high that Toshio couldn't quite catch it, even with his Calathean sensitivity. Saud's mouth twisted and closed into a reluctant attitude of submission. Still, there was something defiant in his eye. He cast a look at Denny, even as he rolled over to offer one of his ventral fins to Kipiru's mouth. The pilot took a token nip, then turned back to the others. The way is clear. I do believe him. Now let us go and drop these breathers